somebody has an interesting question, it would be really nice.
Of course I'm the boss, of course I'm the manager, but at 3 o'clock my influence in the game is nothing.
A coach is somebody who should see a lot of things. I think the most important things are your eyes in coaching.
Lee, welcome. Welcome inside the coach's room.
How are you doing? Thank you for the invitation.
Well, great to have you. Let's rock and roll. That's how we ended our little pre-talk.
Yeah.
We are ready to rock and roll.
Ready to go.
Yeah. We were talking already a little bit about parents, so that you were, as a foundation lead, that you are already, that working with parents is crucial in understanding the players and having the parents understand what you were doing, etc.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like what we spoke about before is, you know, if you're going to coach the players, you have to have a good relationship with the parents. I think understanding the parents and, you know, getting them to buy in what you're doing in terms of philosophy. I think is very, very, very big. So, you know, what we do at QPR is, you know, we educate the parents doing different types of workshops, you know, from psychology workshops to kind of motivational workshops. So, you know, educating the parents so then the parents can pass on all the messages to the players. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you got to coach the players, but also, you know, you got to kind of teach the parents the philosophy. Because some parents, especially, you know, coming from grassroots football, they might not understand, you know, about development. And they might look at it as like a short term. So a short term could be winning, you know, on a Sunday. And some parents coming from grassroots football might see that, you know, just winning is the focus. Where I'm not saying winning is not the focus, but, you know, the development of individuals and players' development is probably the key. If you win and you win the right way through the philosophy, then, you know, then you've kind of been successful in both sides. But educating the parents about philosophy, making sure that they understand, you know, understand their players, understand their sons, you know, through development. Sometimes they might see their son going through changes in terms of, you know, attitude and not kind of performing at a certain level. And then we're just kind of educating them that sometimes players will have a rocket road. You know, performance is not always a straight line.
Yeah.
It's like this. Up and down. So yeah, educating that them outside of the pitch and on the pitch as well. So
I can imagine that once a player joins the academy, he was it's a little bit superficial, but they probably have been the star of their local team. They were a good player.
Yeah,
are used to that. Their kid is maybe the center of attention of the team, and maybe they had some different rules or values. Next to the pitch, they could shout more, and now they come into a more strict and more maybe structured or different way of working at QPR.
Yeah,
they have to learn. Well, they basically have to learn how to shut up sometimes.
And there's been many times when I had to go over and tell parents, look, you know, we don't do that here. You know, sometimes I had to stop the game at times and just say, look, you know, I'm telling your son something, and then you're telling them something different. So there's mixed messages going across. So yeah, you get
it's a challenge. Not even when you are at QPR, but for every coach, specifically when players are younger, parents, when they are in the car, they give their opinion when they drive back from the game or during the game. They're good. Oh, let's go push forward. Yeah, but the coach told me to stay back. Whatever subject or example you can give there. But it's a constant, no, it's not a battle, but it's a balance finding between parents and coaches, of course.
Yeah. Like I said, every parent and every individual is going to be, you know, different and unique. So you might get some parents that are, you know, they understand it, you know, especially the ones that have been in the environment for a long time.
Yeah.
You might get a 15-year-old that's come in the building and don't understand hardly anything. But, you know, as coaches and as staff, that's our job, to kind of educate parents and players at the same time.
So you do it with workshops, and that's what part of it. How do you do it?
Yeah, so we'll do. So we'll put on, you know, once a month or once every 2 weeks, different types of workshops. So we might say, about a year ago, we put on a workshop where we had to write down the parents. We were talking to the parents, and the parents kind of gave their view on different things, like what they want their son to work on. Then we took the parents out of the room and put the players in, and there was really like different views from the parent and the player. And actually the parents learned that actually, you know, what I'm doing is kind of hindering my son's development. So one player was like, you know, my parent tells me this, this, and this, but that's actually affecting me. And then you find out, you know, some players don't like their parents watching them because it brings a lot of pressure. Yeah. And they can't perform. However, on the flip side, some players like their parents to watch because they perform. So it's like you find that different ways of how they develop and stuff like that. We also put on different workshops from, you know, educating, you know, parents of viewing the game. We do a lot of, like, in terms of analysing. So we got a thing called Huddle. You probably heard of it.
Yeah.
We'll kind of a workshop on Huddle, how to work it, how to, you know, show your sons, you know, different clips. Because what you would get parents literally doing their sons' clips, and then we don't want that. We want them to kind of engage and kind of support and guide, rather than actually, you know, you get a dad just doing their clips instead. So
On one way, you want, it's the same as school, of course. You want to get acquainted with video analysis, because I can imagine, well, it's proven as well that 10, 11, 12 is a good start to get, a good point to start with looking at yourself and learning to look at yourself. But then you don't want the parents to look at the videos, but it almost feels like your parents are doing the homework then. So,
because what would happen is the parents look at it from the adult game.
Ah, okay.
They don't look at it from, you know, the foundation or the youth development game. So they'll be like judging, you know, judging the clips on, you know, I don't know, Messi or Ronaldo. Whereas, you know, you got to understand where your son is at. I'm not saying that, you know, it's good to copy and learn off of them players, but, you know, you're never going to kind of hit that height at the moment, are you? And, you know, like you know, like yourself, the adult game is completely different compared to, you know, a 7v7, a 9v9, or 11v11 at youth football.
Yeah, we had we did a webinar with Ross Brooks from West Ham, which, you know.
Yes, very well.
And then when we were building it, the perspective of football for kids is so different than it is for us.
Yeah.
Because we are experiencing football as 11 versus 11 game, watching the whole tactics of a game. Even when we are watching Champions League, we're probably looking at, okay, what's the formation and who is going to do an overlap where, whatever. And then for kids, what struck me is kids, they don't even experience it. 11 is only something they watch on TV. But even then, they mainly look at maybe YouTube highlights or whatever, and cool moves, and they don't care about the different aspects of football. They just care about maybe themselves and maybe one, two players around them, and that's their perspective on
football. And I think it's important to understand that as coaches as well, because, you know, like I said, we watch the whole game, whereas the kids will just watch highlights of, you know, oh, what did Messi do on the ball? It's not what he does away from the ball, but what he does on the ball, you know, different skills, flip-flaps, step-overs. Oh, did you see that amazing run he did? But yeah, it's very, very important that you got to look at the game through the kid's lens rather than, you know, a coach lens at times.
Okay. How did you find your kid's lens? Because, yeah, you've been a player, you've had a training, journey as a player. Maybe we can go into that a little bit later. At one point, you started as a coach.
Yeah.
Started in the foundation phase as well.
Yeah.
You kind of had to maybe find that kid's lens and look, how do I, or maybe learn how to look at it from their perspective. How was that process for you?
Yeah, it was challenging, but I think, you know, from my experience of, you know, working with all different kids from all different backgrounds, as you just stated that, you know, I was, you know, I used to be a PE teacher. So kind of understanding kids from under, you know, under six to all the way up to under 16s. And again, it varies, isn't it? You know, a teenager world is different compared to under nines to under 11. So, you know, when I started off as a foundation phase lead, I was already in that kind of environment, as a PE teacher. So I kind of knew, you know, first thing for me is kind of making the sessions fun, you know, like the skills and development. So a lot of 1v1s, 2v2s, even 3v3s, and kind of going down to kids level. And, you know, you have to kind of understand what their world is. You know, you got all the TikToks and stuff like that. You got different music. So I think it's important to learn about that. And find out what their interest is, like what are they interested in, you know, because your interest is different than a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old. So it's really kind of like, you know, building that relationship with the player, you know.
How did that go? Because then you stepped on the pitch and there were 9-year-olds. You were already a teacher for a while.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
I can imagine you made some interesting mistakes already during those PE lessons.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And then so you had that experience, and then stepping onto a pitch. How did you learn what their world was looked like? Is it okay? Of course, it's talking and listening. Mm. What was the main thing you noticed?
It's just kind of like understanding, you know, what do they want? How do they see the game? And you ask them, and I think questioning and kind of, you know, finding that support, even getting along with the parents, that process helped. I think it helped me a lot was, you know, I've got two daughters, and I think one of them is very similar to the age of, you know, she's 13 now, but at the time she was 9 and 10. So I could kind of relate and understand what her world is looking like. So it kind of helped me that transition going in as a parent and looking at it from a parent's view as well and parent's point of view. So kind of understanding kids, I think that's one of my strengths.
Yeah, so you knew as a parent how to connect with your daughter and how to see their world and how she teaches, and you could implement that on the pitch.
100%. Yeah. So, like, I think, you know, coaches would tell you this, is that you have to put different hats on different sessions. So if you're coaching under nines, under tens, under 11s, you got to be like an actor, isn't it? You know, you got to be enthusiastic. You got to be engaging. You got to be a little bit funny as well. But you got to kind of, you know, make it really fun for them and competitive. So you got to make it competitive in a way where, you know, it's not going to go over the water. So yeah, there was loads of things I learned from, you know, different tactics that are used in teaching, you know, getting players' attention, you know, like the countdown 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, speaking to a group of people where you just say, you know what? Oh, good listening. And it's just little tricks that you learn through just literally playing football and also teaching.
Yeah, so in small things like going down on eyesight level, those small things, I think you've probably learned those as well.
Yeah, one thing for me is stepping away. So rather than, you know, like when you're coaching, especially for me, I'm very enthusiastic and I like to talk a lot. But then actually stepping away from a session and just observing, and that's one thing I've learned from a guy called Chris Ramsey, who's our technical director. Yeah. Is, you know, don't always stand at the middle of the pitch. You know, you got to start, you know, behind the goal, where a right back would be, so you can see the whole pitch and the whole session.
In the process, where were there coaches? Because as a PE teacher, you have probably some guidance at your school, and you obviously in education for that, and then you go into coaching.
Yeah.
Was there like a mentor or a coach around you that you could step to and ask for help?
Yeah. So there's loads of, you know, most of them, like, so basically I grew up playing a lot of football, yeah. and I grew up watching, you know, Brazil, the Ronaldos, the Ronaldinhos. What I loved about is the Dutch football as well, like we spoke about before.
Yeah.
And Ricardo from Spurs, when he was at Spurs at that time, you know, he did a lot of like ball mastery stuff.
Ricardo Moniz is the...
Yeah, that's the Ricardo, yeah.
Yep.
He did a lot of ball mastery stuff, a lot of 2v2s, 3v3s, but that was really good. But what engaged me the most is he spoke a lot about intensity of the session. So he'll come off the session literally sweating.
Himself, and, you mean?
Yes, himself, yeah, and even the players as well. And the engagement he got the players and the toughness and the standards, you know, are kind of rubbed off on me a lot. So, you know, every session that I would do, no matter what age it is always talk about intensity, the tempo of the session. And then when I went from Spurs to Brentford, there was a lot of like, so I focused a lot on individual development. And then I got a job into QPR as a skills coach. So I was able to kind of really just really focus on a lot on technique. And I'm a big believer in that. If your age between 8 and, you know, 12, you've got to really focus on, you know, me and the ball, and really focus on their technique. You know, different skills, different combination of skills, unopposed but opposed as well. 1v1s, 2v2s, 3v3s. I think 4v4s, and like yourself, and that model's come from a lot of Dutch coaches as well. So I focused a lot on that, and that kind of gave me a development platform going into kind of my full-time role as lead foundation and YDP.
Okay. So Ricardo Moniz inspired you almost in the way he approached the session and literally how he executed it.
Yeah.
And how he, well, pretty much gave everything in those sessions.
Yeah, 100%.
Was there an example session or something that you saw from him, or how did it go?
Yeah, he did like a CPD session at Spurs, and he put on different practices, and that kind of philosophy led towards a development center that I used to coach at.
Yeah.
It was an academy, but it was a development center, so it's a next level towards the academy, and we kind of took that same kind of model and pull it into the development center. So we'll focus a lot. I think it was like 45 minutes of ball mastery skills, so different types of combinations. I kind of took that into my sessions from an early stage of coaching.
Okay, so that's, that's process that you see a lot of, but first you just copy it. You see something you really like, and then you just copy it, and then you kind of find out how that works and how it feels and how players experience it and make it your own. Is that what happened?
Yeah. So like, I think as a coach, I think you learn from different types of people. You learn from all different types of coaches. And when you see a session that you like, you'll copy it, but then you make it your own and kind of adjust it in terms of and put your personality on it. I think that's massive in terms of putting your own personality on it, because you can do the same session as someone, but it might not be that good because you haven't put your personality on it. You might copy it word for word, and then you might think, how come that didn't work? And I think that's kind of part of coaching, is looking at something. How does it fit into your players' needs? Are the players engaged? Are you enthusiastic? Are the players enthusiastic? Because I think once the players lose that enthusiasm, then you as a coach, that's down to you. So, you know, looking at it, I think the sessions have got to have rhythm and flow as well. You know, and I've learned that a lot off of Chris Ramsey in terms of having the practices set up straight away. So you go like from here to here to here, and then there's no time wasted, because I think, you know, when the players are with you, there's no time to waste. And I think, and I always say that within my sessions, because you have to tell the players, look, you're here to learn. Yes, you want to have fun, but you're here to develop.
Yeah. And that's, you are working at QPR and you've been working at the level for a long time, but this accounts for every coach on any level, because we all can start preparing a session and let's literally put down the cones in a way that you don't have to put anything extra during the session.
Yeah, 100%. I think one of my big part of my learning was, again, I speak about Spurs Development Center, is a guy called Frank Shillingford. He was one of my coaches as well, through when I was playing for a team called Cranamana Academy, where we used to go around and play all different academies. But yeah, him and Richard Allen, who used to be director, he's the director at Loughborough University now, but he used to work for Spurs as well, and he was the one that took me to QPR for the skills coach role. But what that gave me in my early development was the fact that we had to put a coaching session on, and you couldn't use no cones.
Okay.
So you couldn't use no cones, and then like you do spend 30 minutes of, you know, ball stuff. You can work in twos, you can work in threes, you can do 1v1s. But actually putting that as a challenge, you're like, oh, you know, it's like I'm out of my comfort zone. So then his theory was that if you're at your comfort zone, what are you doing to players?
Yeah.
They're at their comfort zone. And there was the time where we would the manager, the center, would do a session, and then you have to copy that session but make 6 or 7 progressions. And then after you've made the 6 or 7 progressions, he'll put another session on, and then you have to do the same thing again. So it was like, you know, you had to think on your feet. And I think, you know, you get some coaches that would struggle with that, because,
yeah,
you know, you get some of them just work by the book. And for me, I don't think football is like that. Football is not by the book. You might have a plan, but then sometimes something might throw that plan away, and you just got to rip it up and just start again. Like for myself, I always, you know, we at QPR, we have set plans. And then when you go into the game, you have to, you know, plan a session, but then sometimes it might not go like that, and it might not go the way you want it to go. So that's why it's really important to focus on the individual within the session and find out, are you hitting all these individuals? Are you hitting their IOPs, which is an individual plan for the players, you know, and are you engaged? Are they engaged?
Yeah, it's interesting, because while you were saying that, I was thinking, when I was a head coach of a first team, we had our periodization model, and somebody gave me that advice already before head coach, because specifically if you work with first team, second team, we worked with a large group of players, 36 players on the pitch, multiple coaches. But the big thing with senior coaches or senior players, that they have injuries once in a while. Even with youth players, you can have 36 players on paper, but in the end, you have 29 on the pitch. But if you prepare your session for 36 players, and in the end, you have 29,
yeah,
you have to adjust it when the session already started. Yeah, that's horrible. And
yeah,
think on your feet. And well, while they were doing the warm up, you have to rewrite your formations. We always said, okay, prepare your session for, let's say, a range of players. So this is my session, and it is workable for, in this case, 28 to 34 players. So it didn't matter how many players were on the pitch in that, because you kind of know who will be a doubt or not.
Yeah.
In youth, it's exactly the same. Kids can get sick, kids can get whatever, parents are having troubles, whatever. Okay, on QPR level, it's a little bit different, but there are always kids that do not attend the session. So if you have 12 players and you prepare your session for 12 players, you are in pretty almost guaranteed that your session will not work.
No, 100%.
It seems that you are perfectly prepared.
And I think one thing, you know, I think every coach is, you have to be adaptable, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, anything that you do, you know, any session, you're coaching under nines, And under 16s, you've got to be ready to be adaptable straight away. And I think through my experience of coaching the under 9s all the way up to under 16s, I've had a very experience of, you know, how does this under 9 session look to an under 16 session? You know, putting on different hats for the players. And I think, you know, you might have three or four players that are non-contact. How do you engage them? How are they learning from the session? They can't take part in the session, but they can be like a bounce player.
Yeah.
You know, they might be an outside player where they can touch a ball and cross it in. So yeah, like, you know, they're the challenges that you're up against all the time.
Yeah, interesting. Mm. So now, okay, if I summarize a little bit, you have Moniz that inspired you to go into coaching.
Yeah,
I say correctly, Chris Ramsey was played a big part.
Yeah,
maybe helping you in the first phase of QPR.
Yeah,
and now, so now you are in maybe your next phase of coaching, a little bit going more towards your management role. You're responsible for several teams.
Yeah,
told me you were this Wednesday. It's a Wednesday now, but that you're already looking to all the teams for the weekend. Completely different part of football again.
Mm-hmm.
But who's guiding you now in this process? Are you doing it yourself, or are you working with the head of academy? How's it go?
Yeah, so again, like, we always report to Chris Ramsey, who's the technical director, but we'll have like the lead foundation phase coach, and then the assistant head of coaching. So we'll sit at a table and go over all the teams. And again, you know, in terms of my progress now, there's various people at the club that I can go and watch. So yesterday I was watching the under 23s play, speaking to some of the coaches there. So a coach called Paul Hall, who works for the B team, and he's the assistant coach in Jamaica national team. So kind of catching up with them and, you know, seeing how, you know, how their work is going and asking them for little tips. Always, like, for me, my door is always open. So, you know, I always learn from anyone. Even coaches that, you know, work with the QPR, part-time coaches, you know, you might see a session and think, oh, you know what, I actually like that. I like the way the coach is speaking. I like the way he engaged the players. I'm always learning, always.
Is QPR an environment that stimulates that? That's sitting down with each other, talking, stimulating yourself or yourself stimulating each other to go to inspiring each other with session talks, etc.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, we always, one thing we do is we make time to talk about the players. So as full-time staff, we'll sit around, we'll have meetings for an hour and talk about, you know, three or four age groups. You know, what is this player doing? How this player is getting stretched? You know, where's this player? What's this player's program going to look like? I think that's vital. I think, you know, even watching back the games and seeing, okay, you know, this is this. Because one thing I've noticed is you can take a game and you might see it through your lens, but when you go back and watch it, you've missed so much. And I think that you can only take in like 40%, or maybe 40 to 60, and you miss a lot. So, you might go back and say, okay, we played well, we dominated the possession. Then you watch the clips back and you think, actually, we didn't. So, you know, I think in terms of reflection as a coach, I think that's very vital to make sure you understand what players are doing and how they're developing. And I would always go back and watch the games and pick out things. What are players doing on the ball? What are they doing off the ball? And I think now people, especially top coaches and coaches around the world, is people are looking at what they do off the ball now. And I've learned that a lot, especially going from the foundation phase lead to YDP lead, because you're going on from that transition from 7-a-side and 9-a-side to now 11-a-side.
Yeah.
And in 11-a-side, the game moves quicker. You've got to see pitches early. So I've learned that a lot in terms of, you know, looking away from the ball. And kind of helping units within 11-a-side games. So yeah, I've learned that a lot.
So evaluation is crucial in that part of your developing yourself.
Yeah, evaluation is so important. So, you know, we've put in things, you know, from QPR is like, you know, journal work. So we get players to have their own journals and have like write down sessions. How did they do in the sessions? What did they get out of the session? And then did how did they, you know, did they work hard in it or did they, what fun factor was it as well? And we do that through games and training. So then actually what that gives you is understanding, like without even talking to the player, you can actually look at their journal and realize that, hang on, like this player understands the game and this player doesn't. You know, this player's enjoyed the session. This player hasn't. Why hasn't enjoyed that session? So you can write little notes, why, and then you can actually speak to them. Oh, look, I really like your journal. You need to work on this. Now, again, we're not. It's not school, so we're not expecting them to write pages and pages. But it's just like, it just use it as a reflection tool. And also we get them to do clips as well. And then we can give them feedback online as well with the clips.
But in the journal, did I'd like to go into it as well, but the journal sparked me. Is it literally like a notebook or
a notebook? Yeah,
old fashioned notebook, pen and paper. And they sit down after a training session in a dressing room, and they all have their book, and they just take a pen and they write it down.
Yeah. So basically, we're not saying, oh, you got to do it at this time, but we'll give them a week and just say, make sure that, you know, you've got the sessions in it and you're evaluating the game. So they, you know, we focus a lot on, you know, in possession and out of possession and the development area. So can you score? Can you make, can you stop? So really, really simple keywords. And then they will come up and we'll kind of like take them in and have a look at them, read them and then give them back with some feedback. So
It's also, I can imagine for a player, well, if you look into personal development, it's also good to journal and write down your issues or whatever, that they can write it off or something, that they can just, okay, I've put it on paper. Now I just maybe, how do you say it? They did something with their feelings and they wrote it down and they, and then it kind of, it gives them a little bit of space to relieve it and then move on again.
And they don't need to always be right, and they can draw the actual, you know, practices that we did.
Cool.
And then it just comes to life a little bit. And it's not, you know, you might get under 9, might just draw pictures. You might get under 16 that goes in more depth and, you know, more, you know, maybe tactical side of the game. But yeah, so we do that a lot. That's a big focus within that.
Great. I never heard that actually on paper. You heard apps and people have to fill in, okay, how do you feel before training, but after training, I never heard it.
And also, you know, we give a journal to every coach as well. So making sure that they reflect and, you know, what kind of what individuals did they focus on, and, you know, how did the session go? So they're evaluating as well.
And so you are allowed to read the player's journal, or they are allowed to read the coach's journal?
No, a player's not allowed to read our journal.
It would be interesting as well.
No, it would be. It would be.
Yeah, actually, it would be. Okay, and then so you journal as well. So do you have your evaluation way, or you write down things? Is there something you wrote down recently that thought, okay, that was very important, or that was very, yeah, that made an impact that maybe you could share?
Yeah, so there was, I've done a session about a week ago where, you know, We always play in like 5v5, 6v6. Like, so I'm taking
the under-12s, is this right?
Under-12s at the moment, yeah. So we did like a 7v7 little game, and players had to, you know, players had to just play a normal game. And then I thought to myself, how am I going to get them to move the ball quickly? Because at that age now, you know, we want them to get their head up.
Yeah.
You know, we do focus a lot on 1v1s and dribbling. But we need to now focus on when they dribble and when not to dribble. And then I talked a lot about triangles. So I was saying to them, look, you know, can you get into triangles or diamonds? And I just, that key word of getting into triangles, showed them how to do it. And then they did it and they were doing okay. And then I thought, okay, so now, you know, they're playing very one-sided how am I going to now stretch them and see where I can get them to move the ball to the other side? So I said to them, I just done a line, like, so set out the flat cones on one side. So I split it into three, and I said, if you play the ball in all thirds and you score, it's worth five.
Yeah.
If you just score normally, it's worth one. And so you got them actually, like, without me even telling them, they actually moved the ball quicker. They recognized when to dribble, and they started to really focus on that side of that game. And then, so you're actually setting the practice up to get them outcomes.
Great. And that's something then, in the end, you write down, okay, this worked, this is the way it should be, and this is something I want to remember.
Yeah.
And what I want to use probably again.
Yeah. And also did something similar. So, you know, we always talk about, you know, playing like underloaded and underloaded games. So we did like a 7v5 game. And actually the team that was five, the team against seven was just moving the ball quickly and tried to score. And that seven, that team played, the seven against five really dominated the game. And then we flipped it and went the 5v7. And actually 5v7 dominated them. So, you know, and I think them games are important because, you know, without even realizing the 7v5, you know, they have to move the ball quickly. They have to break down the five. You shouldn't really lose the ball against 5v7. And then the five are literally playing. That's a challenge, isn't it? They're out of their comfort zone. You know, they can't just go and press the ball because, you know, there'd be too many gaps. So they got to think about when to press, how to press, and stuff like that. And then, you know, with the seven, they're looking at passing angles. They're looking to score as many goals. They're recognizing the overload. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Cool. Yeah, this is part of being a coach, to find yourself what's in a session, and depends on your team. Of course, you can do a session with the previous group that worked out perfect, and now you have a different type of player. And it's completely different. Interesting, but we had a guy from Sporting. Oh, by the way, sometimes we hear a little bit of wind.
Yes,
not your daughters that are.
No. Apologies. It's really windy where I'm at.
There's storm. If I look at outside here, it's exactly the same. So, but then
I've closed all the windows, and it's still, I can hear it.
Yeah, me too. But that doesn't matter. But then people know if they're in the car, it's not the wind that's blowing against the car. It's your your room. Mm-hmm. But no, I forgot what I wanted to say. But
Sporting Lisbon?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the coach, he was evaluating every session and wrote down every evaluation. And he said, maybe you don't even look at, let's say, 75% of them. If you want to, you can. That's something that struck me, because I used to evaluate the sessions in my car when I drove back home. And of course, there's a process going, but there was no way of registering it for me. There was no registration or no notes. But if you do, then you have your whole library in front of you, and you're not going to make, well, it's going to be easier to not make the same mistakes.
Yeah. And I've learned that off of Chris at the academy at the moment, Chris Ramsey, is that, you know, he always tells you to write things down, because, you know, you have a library of sessions, you have a library of reflections.
Yeah.
And then again, like you said, you know, coaches make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. So then, you know, you try not to make the same mistake twice, isn't it?
Yeah. And in the end, it all comes down to discipline, I think, because you can evaluate the session in your little notebook throughout the session. Okay, the plus or minus when something went good or bad. Mm-hmm. And then after a session, when you're in your dressing room, it takes you 3 minutes to write them keywords down. And you already know how it went, and just file it, if it's on paper, or put it in Excel. Then you have your whole library ready.
100%.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. And a little bit, we didn't touch on that, because in your process as a coach, you've shown us a little bit, but in your process as a player, you were a good player until 18, 19, I think. And then you went to Brazil. Well, you still were a good player, but you you were trying to get up the ranks in professional football in England.
Yeah.
You decided that Brazil was a good move
to do
as a youth, almost senior player.
Yeah, so basically what happened is that I was playing here, and I think when I was growing up, a lot of people didn't look at small players, whereas now it's the opposite.
You're small? Are you?
Yeah, I was.
You small?
Well, not now, but and when I was growing up, I was really small, really technical player. But back then they didn't really look at players that with technique. You might have one or two in your team. I kind of struggled, and I had to find ways of, you know, dominating the game without being physical. So, you know, my awareness and, you know, my touch and being very skillful was the key for me. And, you know, how I developed that was just literally just playing 1v1s on the street, 2v2s, 3v3s. Just kind of doing that. And then what happened is I played for a couple of clubs here, and then I was 18 at the time, 19, and there was I had a trial for Watford and playing for Watford, and a Brazilian guy come up to me when I was playing just like a trial game, and he said, look, you know, I've got contacts in Brazil. Would you like to go out there? And I was like, why not? I didn't have nothing else.
Yeah, so great adventure.
It was an agent that signed me up, and he took me there for 2 weeks and said, look, you're going to be here for 2 weeks. If it works out, we'll sign you and get you to some clubs. If it don't work out, you have a good holiday. So I was like, yeah, why not? So I went out there. I went to a place called Santos, where Pele is from. There was two clubs there. Played for like a small little academy. Done really well. He signed me up with his agency, and I went, played for two clubs in Brazil, and had to grow up really quick. The language, didn't know the language. No one spoke English when I was there. So I had to learn Portuguese, which now I can speak. I can get by, I'm not fluent. I played for two clubs out there, and unfortunately I got injured and then had to come back. And then the same agent got me a trial in Germany when I was better. And then that kind of, I wasn't good enough then. Then I kind of, you know, what that experience taught me was that the different type of football. Yeah. If you go to Brazil, there's skillful players everywhere. And all they want to do is, you know, twist you up and drop a shoulder, drop a step over. But something that interests me is that the way they train. So that's one thing that, you know, if I ever have my own academy or, be a first team coach or be an assistant coach somewhere, is that, you know, different surfaces is so important. So, like the Brazilians, well, I got to experience training on the beach 3 times a week, training in the futsal twice a week, and then training on the grass the rest. So, you know, everyone talks about Brazilian players being really comfortable on the ball, but I think it stems from different surfaces that you play on. Because on the sands, you're good technically on the grass, but on the sand, you're not going to be that great. And I had to learn that quickly, to be fair.
Yeah.
And the way, you know, training on the sand is different than training in the futsal hall or on the grass. So your muscle twitch fibers are different. You know, it builds up your calf. The sand builds up your quads. And I think that's why some players are, you know, their legs are really strong. And they do a lot of running on the beach as well. So
okay. It's also not the most fun thing to do, but
no, not that fun. But yeah, that really struck me. And coming into the coaching world is, you know, learn different ways that they train. They did a lot on technique. So like volleys, like someone will just clip a ball into you and you volley into the net. Did a lot on that. And it was also interesting, you know, the time when there was Ronaldinho and Ronaldo, they played like, they played a 4-2-2-2. So they like played a lot of wing backs. You had two players sitting as two defensive midfielders. You had two number 10s, which was interesting. Helped me because I didn't have to defend that much.
Yeah.
So just getting the ball and create. It was like different formats and different ways and different style. And
it's something that you implement, which in the future you would like to implement it for sure. But do you take your players out to the futsal to Hall now, or do you take him to the parking lot, or is it any way that you implement this now?
I think in England it's a bit different. I think, you know, I know in Holland they would do that, but you know, in terms of health and safety in England, there's a lot of stuff like that. But I think, you know, what we used to do, we used to do a lot of futsal, and I think futsal does help. So the ball's heavier, as you know, ball's heavier. You got to think quickly. You got to roll the ball. But yeah, one thing that struck me in Brazil is that they're skillful, but also they know how to move the ball quickly. And people look at, you know, just the skill set, but you got to look at what they do off the ball as well.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I know the using different surfaces creates, of course, a lot of. Well, it increases the adaptability. So break your mouth on in English, but adaptability increases a lot when you train on different surfaces.
Yeah. And even like training barefoot. You know, I went to a conference in Denmark when I was speaking, and there was a Belgian guy there, and he spoke about training on the AstroTurf bare feet, because you know you get that physical contact with the foot on the ball. But yeah, it's just the different ways, isn't it, and different ways of developing players.
Pretty easy actually to implement this in your sessions. You can just okay, guys, the weather is good or the weather is bad, we're taking off our shoes.
Yeah,
and it's going to be an interesting session for sure.
Yeah. But also it tough, you know, it toughens the kids up, no? Because you got nothing to protect at all.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Yeah, well, I know. I think I don't know if it's Ajax or Ajax. They work with different surfaces for sure. So they have even organized tournaments for their partner club, etc., where they play on different surfaces. So kids get to experience it, and clubs get to experience it as well. I don't know which club it was, but they created a pitch from which they on which they did no maintenance. So it was a pitch that was the old-fashioned pitch with bumps and holes and mud and everything. And the only thing that they would do is cut the grass once in a while and put the lines on it, and that's it. And they would either do training sessions there or organize games there. So just to experience different levels of quality of pitches.
Yeah.
AstroTurf is the most predictable way to train. The ball always rolls perfectly. There's no problems. The speed is predictable. But when you go to grass or when you go to bad grass,
you're going to struggle.
Yeah. Everything is good. And then you see the skillful players coming up.
That's true.
So that's interesting. Okay. So that's something you picked up from Brazil.
Yeah.
Is there also a way that you, because everybody was very skillful, that you see, okay, maybe in England or where you coach now, that the level is different and the way kids are brought up is different. So is it something that you try to connect these two worlds, or maybe soften up the kids, or maybe not? Is there a connection there?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, creating an environment, what I noticed in Brazil, it's all about an environment, isn't it? So if you create like a positive environment where creativity is key, then, you know, you're going to create creative players, ain't you? So, you know, like, you know, in terms of, you know, the model at QPR, like, you know, we're in a position where you're going to create skillful players, ain't you? Players that are good on the ball, because the focus is always on 1v1s, 2v2s, ball mastery. We call it core turn. So every session, probably the same in Holland as well, like from the Ajax model, is that, you know, a lot of combinations of skills, mastering the ball. But yeah, that's one thing that I've definitely taken into in that environment, is, you know, how are you going to create that creative environment where players feel like they can express themselves?
Interesting. And when you work with the players, is there a way that you measure that development, or maybe even measure that creative part of development? That you talked about a journal, but is there a way that you follow them with data, or do you give them grades, or how does that go?
Yeah, so we've, like, again, you know, with the EPPP, so we've got a called a performance clock, so it clocks how many sessions players do. you know, in terms of what they do, what are they involved in, how many games they play, what are their game time. So, you know, how many minutes have they played at a certain, certain time. So in 6 months, you might show a player that he's played on a 2,000 minutes. And then you look at that and who's played most and why. And you can see their development in terms of that. But also we have like reports as well. Yep. So we'll have like coaches write reports every 6 weeks. And, you know, and that's how we measure, you know, how they're doing within the group, what they need to work on. So even before the reports, we've got individual plans. So, you know, we set the plans and the players, like what they need to work on, you know, from the foundation phase, from nines to 11s, maybe 12s, they're a bit generic. As they get older, it comes more specific in terms of understanding their roles. So, you know, if you have a left back, okay, the first thing a left back needs to do is defend. If he can't defend, he's not going to get a career in the game. So, yeah, we focus a lot on, you know, defending with that left back and then put different targets for that person. And also, we, you know, I think the modern game is that a left back has to be able to, you know, dribble, has to be able to step outside the pitch, got to be able to deliver the ball. And then also, you know, got to be able to defend 1v1. So then we will kind of tailor that towards whatever position that they're playing in from 16s to 15s.
And this categorization in maybe positions or roles, at what age does it start?
That will start from 15 to 16s.
It's more specific.
Yeah, more specific. They might play in two roles because you don't know where that player is going to end up. I think from 14s to 12s, they might play in three roles. But again, like what we do in each game, we might have a player that plays in defense for two games. So then they build up that repetition, they build up that rhythm, and then we might look to change them rather than just play one game centre back and the other game centre back, other game left midfield, because then it becomes a bit confusing for them. So yeah, and then we might move players around. So you might get a player that, you know, he just play central, so he can play as a nine, centre mid or centre back. And then we might get a player that plays left back, left wing, and left forward. So then, you know, the different sections of the pitch.
Okay, interesting. And then, so from, let's say, 9 to 12, it's pretty general approach, creating technical abilities. 12 to 14 is more already more specific. Maybe look at bigger parts of the pitch where they will probably end up. And then from 15, 16, it will be literally more specific. What are your weapons? What are the weapons that you succeed with in professional football?
Yeah. So, like, again, like, you know, we talk a lot about developing. It's called, like, developing the pyramid. So, like, you know, you got your under 8s to under 10s. They will focus a lot on extreme technique. So a lot of, you know, passing, receiving, you know, individual skills, wow moments on the ball. From, say 10 to 13, you're looking at movement experimentation. How do they move? How do they create space? When do they go into space? Can they get their head up? So you're looking at that movement type element. Do they recognize to go into space or do they don't? Then I say 13 to 15, you're looking at movement refinement. So how do they, you know, can they move now? Like, where do they move? You know, if you get a winger at 15, what's his movement like? Does he come inside the pitch? Does he go outside the pitch? Does he start his runs on the shoulder? Does he make runs across the centre backs, across the full back? They're the kind of things that we will focus on. And then, you know, you're looking at position refinement from 15, 16. So, you know, now they understand their position. Where do they fit? You know, if you're looking at a forward, like, does he score goals? What's his first touch like? Can he hold up the ball? You know, does he set the ball? Does he set and then stand still, or does he set and spin? They're the kind of key factors that we look at. So And then you're looking at expertise, which is like, you know, 18 up to the first team.
Okay. And is it connected to system or let's say a formation, or is it just a style of play?
Style of play.
Individual style of play even.
Yeah. Again, so style of play, you know, we base the model, like I'm not saying whatever the players can play. So for example, if the players are good and their strengths are, that's where we'll tailor the sessions and also what we got. So you might have, we play a lot of 4-3-3. So then the reason why we do that is because you get the rotation in the midfield. But there might be times when we will play, you know, 4-4-2. So then the player gets understanding of how to play within a two. Because you might, if you've played 4-3-3 all your life and then you've been released and you go to a non-league club or you go to a fourth division club and they're playing 4-4-2, what's going to happen to you?
Yep.
You're going to be lost. Yep. So then we create environments where players, you know, if you're playing a 4-3-3, you understand about rotation and midfield. You got your diamonds, you got your triangles. And then you're playing in a 4-4-2, you understand, okay, how to play in a two now. And then even if you got, you know, you might have in your squad, you might have two strikers. You got to teach them how to play in a 4-3-3 because you're the long striker, aren't you? Yep. And then you got to teach them how to play in a two. So, yeah, we would put, you know, we will base on whatever we play based on what we got and what individuals that we've got at that time.
Yeah.
But like the answer to your question is, yeah, it's all about the style.
Yeah. Okay. And it's up to the coach and also the style of the coach that decides whatever, yeah, the formation, whatever it is at that point. So if you have a two strikers, you would maybe go for a 4-4-2.
Mm.
If we have a coach that wants to experience with the 5-3-2, he can do it as well. As long as it benefits the player development, it's kind of a mix of the philosophy of the coach, the club, and the player. It all comes to what I'm hearing.
Yeah. So basically, like, you know, the lead phase coaches will discuss with the part-time coaches what players that you've got. You know, if you play 4-4-2, you know, and you've got a centre back, then that's fine. But yeah, it's all based on it's what is the rationale, what is the reason why you're doing that, and what is the why. There's always got to be a reason why. Why are you doing this? Is it benefiting the players? Is it helping not just one individual? You know, is it helping the whole team? Because, you know, like, you know, you don't want to focus it just on one individual, because then that one person will be developed, but the others are missing out.
Yeah.
So it depends on the individuals and what you got at that present time.
Right. Interesting. Mm. Yeah. It's the same. Well, the same strategy you hear with a lot of coaches we talk to these days. It's player-centered, and it's also there's flexibility for the coaches to to make the decision, but at the same time coaches are asked to explain afterwards. So I can imagine you do the same. You sit down with your coaches afterwards on Monday, or maybe even already on Saturday. Okay, you made these choices, why? It's not to control you or to monitor you. No, we just want to learn why. And I can imagine the process is the same for you.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, like we spoke about before, is it's about the players, isn't it? It's not about, you know, the coaches. The coach, you're just there as a vehicle to help them, isn't it? And it's about, you know, getting the best out of the players. So if that format and that, you know, that formation that you're playing, or that style that you're playing, if that's getting the best out of the players, then you're going to go with that.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, before we started, you said, I asked you, are you a reader?
Mm.
I don't know if I have the impression that you are. Yeah, you read a lot of leadership books, you said?
Yeah, so, you know.
What are you reading now?
I'm reading a book. It was by the SAS called Positive Thinking.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the actor's name now. He was a lead. He's not an actor, but he was the SAS guy that did the Channel 4 program. And it's about positive thinking, and you can always adapt that to football or in life in general.
General, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but also in the past, I've read, you know, the Cruyff book. That was very interesting. Also, the Legacy the All Blacks legacy. They talked about a lot of, you know, leadership, about don't be ashamed to sweep the sheds. And I think that's a good book to read about leadership. But yeah, I've read quite a few about, I think everyone has read Bounce, about, you know, the environment that you create is so important.
Yeah.
It's about, I don't know if you read it, but it's about the table tennis person that developed. But yeah, I do like to read. I wish I had more time to read, but
yeah. It's complicated. Yeah, yeah. We all try to read this a couple of pages before we go to bed or when we wake up. But when you have kids, it sometimes gets more difficult. You're happy that you hit the pillows.
I think as a coach, I think, you know, and it goes from myself, and I noticed it. So when I first started QPR in 2015, I was literally just working and coaching and trying to improve. And then about 3 years later, I realized to myself that I'm helping coaches, I'm helping the players, but where's my development?
Yeah.
So I started to spend at least an hour a day on my development. So that can be anything from watching a game, writing about the game. So just watching any game and, you know, not pretending, but think about, if I'm in that situation, I'm the gaffer, what would I do? And I'll just write about, I have my notepad and just write down what did I see in the game? How would I approach that? Would I approach that differently? Would I have kept the same? Who would I, you know, say, for example, it's a Chelsea v Man United game and, you know, Chelsea attacking down the left and they're not having success. Would I change that or would I keep it? I did stuff like that. I watched loads of YouTube clips. I watched a lot of podcasts. And I even do it now. And I think that's helped me a lot. And one person that's really, like, I listen to a lot is Thomas Tuchel, the Chelsea new manager, only because I'm a Chelsea fan. So, yeah. But one thing strikes me with him is the way that he talks and the way he's so honest in his conference when he talks to the press. So and I think that as a coach, you got to take that and you got to be honest with your players. You got to be honest, whoever you talk to. And I think that goes a long way. But yeah, that's one thing I've learned from him.
Yeah, interesting. So, but it started with, okay, I if I think about it myself and if I think, see a lot of coaches, people just start out to become a coach. They find themselves on a pitch with 20 balls and a group of kids. And then at one point they realize, okay, I need to start investing in this and I need to go deeper. Otherwise, I'll just run the practices. I need to start learning more about relationships with people. I need to start learning more about myself. How do I act in certain situations? What are my almost natural reflexes when I come into stress? Because those determine my reaction. And it's not something that is, it's not something that most coaches are aware of when they start out being a coach.
100%.
At the same time, it's the most deciding factor in how you perform as a coach, because we can all copy exercises, we can all make exercises, we can all bring a group together. But yeah, I think, and that's interesting for you that you took an hour a day to invest in yourself for a period of time. That's the most important, I think. We were talking to Frank de Boer. Unfortunately, the podcast is in Dutch because we agreed to do it in Dutch, but he had actually did pretty much the same process. So he came from a player, he shifted to a coach, two months period, he all of a sudden he found himself on a pitch, and then he had to learn how to talk to kids, and how to work with kids and how to interact with people, which is completely different.
100%.
When you're a player.
I think
interesting, but it's...
He's breaking up. Can you hear me?
There you go.
You know what he said about the...
Yeah, I can hear you.
He said about the screen's going to go fuzzy. He just did it now. Yeah.
Yeah. Just did it. Okay. Well, we're almost in the end.
Yeah. No. What you said about Frank de Boer, I think that's vital. And you know, like I said before, I think any coach, you know, that's coaching a session. Like, I'm a big believer in you got to bring your character within the session. You got to bring your personality. And like you said, in it, like, about building relationship with kids, building relationship with players. I think once you build a relationship with players, they trust you. And then the learning will come out. And in terms of being engaged within the session or within the game, you got to make the players want to be there. You got to make the players want to listen to you. And I think that's what I've learned the most, is engaging players and building relationship, and the communication is so important. And I kind of learned that a little bit as a teacher. And that's the reason why I did it. Like, I've done a degree in PE and sport. The reason why I taught is to get into the professional game, because I think if you can manage a classroom of learners, you can actually transform that into the sessions and manage group of kids and group of players.
I can imagine if you can manage a group of high school kids, then a team of motivated players feels like heaven.
Yeah.
Kids of on PE classes, maybe half of them does not want
don't to. Don't want to be there. It's
if
true.
You can motivate them, and off football pitch with motivated kids is easy. Yeah.
But the reason why I took that path is because I looked at Jose Mourinho, I looked at Van Gaal, and there was another guy called Clement at Chelsea. He used to be at Chelsea and Derby, and Real Madrid. I think he was assistant to Angelo.
Okay.
Yeah, and they took a very similar path. So when I was younger, I was like, look, I'm going to kind of go that path and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was another coach from Feyenoord. He's doing the U9s or U10s.
Mm.
He intentionally took a job at a daycare or to work with young kids.
Love that.
We have kids. Yeah. We do not want to work at a daycare. No. We are very sure, but he took that job.
That's like a double shift. That's like a double shift, isn't it?
It's double shift with kids from, let's say, 2 to 5 or whatever. That's the hardest job ever. And he took it as a preparation to become a good youth coach. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, that is. That's very amazing. Actually, that's good.
Yeah. Okay, Lee, before we end this talk, because I think we got a nice look into your journey as a coach and your philosophy and a small part of the QPR philosophy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who should we talk next? Who should we talk to next?
There's a good friend of mine, and I think he'll be valuable to the talk. He's a guy called Michael Donaldson. He works for Reading. He's the under-18s coach at Reading. He used to be working for Spurs, so he used to do the 14s to the 12s to 14s.
Yeah.
He's another one as well. That's got vast experience within the game.
Great, so. Great. Well, let's after this recording, let's find a way to connect with him.
100%.
You can tell him how this was, and hopefully, it was a positive experience for you as well.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. I love doing stuff like this, and
great.
Yourself as well. It's in football, you never know. So
that's good true. To connect with. Oh, and I like the way that you're open to share and. That you shared parts of your that made you the coach that you are now, which is actually already a big journey if you've had so far.
Yeah.
To close it up, is there a last thing you want to give away to the or maybe share with the listeners that you find important, or did we say everything?
I'm trying to think. I think we covered everything. I think that in terms of what I was mentioning. There's one thing that I do want to do is, you know, go to Holland or Europe and see how they develop players. Even Belgium, I know Belgium, the way they develop players is different. There was something that stood out for me in terms of going on tour. So that's something that I forgot to mention.
That you want to get back. Well, you're always welcome in the Netherlands. I'm happy to hook you up with the coaches from my network and then, pretty sure that they are willing to share with you as well or show you as well.
Perfect.
Let's do this after this recording. I'll connect you to whatever, whoever you like.
100%.
If there are people listening from Belgium and they hear this and they want to help you, well, you know how to find us and you know how to find Lee. So let's put that out there and see what happens.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you. There's one thing I want to mention is about going on tour. So I think, you know, from any football club, that if you go, you know, everyone probably knows this anyway, but I think it's important to say is that when you go on tour with a team, you find out more about your players in terms of their daily routine, how they eat, what they eat, how did it, you know, is their room messy in terms of checking the room and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, what are their timekeeping like, you know, and how they actually perform within a professional pressured environment in terms of competition. So, you know, I think going on tour is so valuable.
Yeah.
And even you learn about your staff as well. Because I've been on various tours to Belgium, to Germany, you know, to France, when it was just myself leading the tour. And also you learn about different cultures. So we went to Germany and I see the German players warming up. And I see them warming up with a thing called Sense Ball. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, no.
And I've never experienced that. And it was so good because they'll use it to warm up and they'll just play straight, go into the game straight away. And we had no space to warm up.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that technique of using the Sense Ball, the ball and the string, was so good. And then I've done some research on it. And, you know, it's been used by a lot of teams. You know, FC Metz use it, the Belgian clubs use it as well. And it develops, you know, your brain and also your cognitive skills as well. And I've actually started to train it myself. So, yeah.
So if you come into connection with other football cultures or other styles of development or whatever, and the good thing on being on tour or in a tournament is that you can walk up to the coach, say, "Hi, I'm Lee. Why do you do this?" And then you have an interest straight away.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit the same. Well, it's completely different than this podcast, but you get inspired. But then you can literally walk up to the guys or see what the effect is, which is very interesting, no, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, that's something that really stood out, the Sense Ball technique. Are those clubs in Holland use it or not?
I know there are some, let's say, private academies that use it. I don't know if pro clubs or pro academies, I don't know. Probably they will, or probably they have. I don't know, but there are all types of balls or methods that are interesting. I don't know if you know the athletic skills model.
Okay, but in terms of judo and stuff like that,
they developed also because it's all focused on adaptability.
Yeah, and the body, moving the body freely. Yeah,
and because they were aware of what we just said, that the artificial grass is so predictable.
Mm.
Created a ball that became unpredictable.
Okay.
Had a ball which has a little bit of flaws in it or a little bit of a weight.
Mm.
It starts bouncing even on an equal surface. So you would do a passing drill and this thing will start bouncing.
Mm.
All the kids train on Astro, everybody has predictable circumstances, and these. It's only a couple centimeters or maybe even less that it starts moving, but your reaction and your first touch and everything changes.
Okay.
Yeah. It simulates grass almost.
Okay.
So, yeah. There are all kinds of way in...
Different methods.
Yeah. There are different methods in developing and working with your surroundings. Yeah. It's interesting.
Nice. That's good.
Okay, Lee, I want to thank you very much. And
Thank you. Thank you for your invitation.
We'll get you to Belgium and the Netherlands, and we'll keep in touch for sure.
Definitely. And I won't forget to send you Michael Donaldson's email.
No. We'll contact you after this.
Okay. Definitely. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. See you later.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, bye.